We're going to give Navadvip. We had it right here, but for some reason I didn't see it. The reference for Paribhasa Sutra is as follows. Tat uktam aniyamahe niyam tarini paribhasa iti. A Paribhasa Sutra explains the proper method for understanding a book. It gives the key by which one may understand the actual purport of a series of apparently unrelated facts and arguments. This is a quote from Krishna Sandarbha, Anucheda 29. And furthermore, you wanted a reference for the Bhagavatam. There's a reference in the Krishna Sandarbha. It states, this third chapter in the first canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam tells the secret of the Lord's birth and gives summary of all the descriptions of the Lord's incarnations. Because it comes at the beginning of the book and because it describes what will follow later on, the Eti Chamsakalaha Pungsha verse is the Paribhasa Sutta for the Srimad Bhagavatam. Because in the opening statement of the book, the truth, Pratijna, the book intends to establish is presented in these descriptions of the incarnations, one should know that Krishna is the original Supreme Personality of Godhead and the others are expansions of the Purusha incarnations. Krishna Sandarbha. Okay, so today we are going to read and discuss from many important statements from texts 2 and 3. Did everybody understand everything you read? Huh? Well, you're in good company, because Srila Prabhupada, as you may recall, also said that he also found it very difficult to understand his Guru Maharaj's words. However, Prabhupada advised that by repeated hearing of the subject matter, it may gradually be understood. So, text 2. Sahasrapatra kamalam gokulakyam mahatpadam tat karnikaram tat dhamma tat anantamsha sambhavam. The spiritual place of transcendental pastimes of Krishna is portrayed in the second verse. The super excellent station of Krishna, which is known as Gokul, has thousands of petals and a corolla like that of a lotus sprouted from a part of his infinitary aspect, the whirl of the leaves being the actual abode of Krishna. As you can see in the outline I gave you, at least for those of you who got the outline, the first thing to understand are the general characteristics of Goloka. You may recall that in the verse it says the infinitary aspect of the Lord. So this word here is Ananta. Ananta means unlimited or infinite. And Ananta is the expansion of Baladev. So the spiritual world is actually a manifestation of the infinitary aspect of Baladev. That means Baladev has through Ananta, he has an unlimited potency for manifesting the spiritual world. And as Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati mentions, and as we shall see later on, when it comes to material creation, another potency of Baladev is seen in his all-accommodating potency. So he has the potency to expand unlimited spiritual manifestations. That means he, by his potency, he manifests Goloka Vrindavan, he manifests all the Vaikuntha planets. This is the potency of Baladev. Again, who is Baladev? Baladev is the first expansion of Krishna. We will learn later on in the Brahma Samhita that just as one candle can light up another candle and another candle and another candle, and each of the lights burns with equal brilliance, so the original candle, or the original supreme truth, Krishna, expands first as Balaram or Baladev, just like you see in our temple, Krishna and Balaram. What is the difference between Krishna and Balaram? Only the color, practically, their color. Otherwise, in terms of potency, they are equal. However, as Srila Prabhupada asked us in the car ride, Giriraj Maharaj was in the car, and myself, and I think one or two others, we were driving from Mayapur to Calcutta. And Srila Prabhupada asked Giriraj Maharaj, who is stronger, Krishna or Balaram? What did you reply, Maharaj?
Krishna is stronger.
Krishna is stronger. But Prabhupada said, everyone knows that Balaram, Bala means powerful or strength. So why do you answer like that?
Because Balaram is resting his arm on Krishna's shoulder.
Right. So Prabhupada was very pleased with that answer, and he confirmed that that was the correct answer. So, in any case, Krishna and Balaram are considered to be equally potent supreme personalities of Godhead. But for the purpose of Krishna, the original Lord, does everything through his expansions and potencies. So for material creation and for spiritual manifestation, he depends upon Baladev. So one of the characteristics is that the spiritual world is a manifestation of Balaram's infinite potencies. And that form of Balaram, when we describe that, is known as Ananta. Another point is that the spiritual world, or Krishna Loka rather, is the highest of all planets. Here in this world, in this universe, there are so many planets. Of course, the scientists say there are 9 planets, and then so many other bodies, heavenly bodies. In any case, whatever way you count, in each universe there are many orbs, or planets. And how many universes there are is practically unable to be counted. In other words, the universe is calculated that we cannot see into another universe. At least this is according to Vedic consideration or calculation. And as many mustard seeds as there are in a huge sack of mustard seeds, so many universes, impossible to calculate practically. You could count the mustard seeds, but you cannot count the number of universes. And beyond all of these is the spiritual world. And in the spiritual world, there are unlimited planets again. And the highest planet of all in the spiritual world is Krishna Loka. Now, Srila Jiva Goswami has given some very nice quotations to establish the position of Krishna Loka. He quotes Lord Indra. And Lord Indra describes that those who perform spiritual austerities attain the highest place in the spiritual world, known as Goloka, where the Sarabi cows are wandering everywhere. Sarabi cows, we will learn later on, are wish-fulfilling cows. Now, sometimes there are critics who say that how can the word Goloka refer to the highest spiritual planet? What it must mean is, go means cow, and loka means a place, so it must be a place where there's many cows, in other words, a cow pasture. And it can't be describing anything higher. But Jiva Goswami immediately dispels this false criticism by stating that Indra says that I cannot understand this planet, nor can any of the other great authorities in the material universe understand this planet, and therefore, since all of us cannot understand this planet, Goloka can't be an ordinary cow pasture, because anyone can visit an ordinary cow pasture. Goloka must refer to the particular planet where Krishna is residing, because Krishna's another name is Govinda or Gopal, which means that he gives pleasure and he gives protection to the cows. So it must be referring to the planet where Krishna resides. And that planet is considered to be the highest of all. Now, here we are situated in Gokul. Gokul Vrindavan. Goloka Vrindavan is the highest planet where Krishna resides. Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is residing in the spiritual world in the topmost place. And at the same time, we are sitting here on this earthly region in 90 miles or so away from New Delhi, in a place in this planet, and you can see it on a map. So what is the relationship between this Vrindavan and the Vrindavan which is existing in the spiritual world? This is the next point to understand, a comparison. It is a very important truth. When we came here in 1971, at the end of 1971, there was a war between Pakistan and Bangladesh, right? Was India and Pakistan? Anyway, whatever it was, it involved all three. Bangladesh hadn't been formed yet. It was India and Pakistan, right? So we took shelter in Vrindavan while all the demons were fighting. And Prabhupada took us on a tour of Vrindavan. So Prabhupada was always explaining that one of Prabhupada's disciples said that this place is so dirty. There's so many pigs running around and the stool is everywhere. And Prabhupada just said, you are not seeing Vrindavan. You're only seeing the external affairs are going on, but you cannot actually see Vrindavan. He said, because this Vrindavan is transcendental and eternal, it is Chintamani Dham. And actually, Prabhupada's words are confirmed by scripture. The scripture states that this place, Vrindavan, and the kingdom of God, Vrindavan, are none different, except the only thing is that one is high up in the spiritual world, and the other one is within this world. This world means that if we calculate the entire size of God's manifestation, the spiritual world is considered to be 3/4. And the material, when I say world, I don't mean just earth, but the material realm is considered to be 1/4. Now, here's an interesting fact. That 3/4 is the spiritual world, 1/4 is the material realm. The planet Krishna Loka or Goloka is said to be larger than the whole rest of the spiritual world. And the spiritual world is 3/4 of the entire manifestation. And here we are in Vrindavan, which is one little area situated between Agra and Mathura and Delhi. And it fits. And yet, this place is bigger than everything else put together. Now, how do you explain that? It has to be understood. I know the Palananda Swami will explain. Anyway, he will speak through my words. This is the Achinta Shakti, which means that Krishna has a potency which is inconceivable. Of course, you may argue that that's an easy way out by simply saying that it's inconceivable, therefore we have no argument to refute this. Yes, that's true. You have no argument to refute it. And therefore, when we deal with God, certain things are inconceivable. Even within the material world, we see inconceivable potency is acting. The famous example is that a banyan tree, which is gigantic, can be contained within the small seed of a banyan tree at its inception. Within that seed is the potential for the creation of an entire tree, which can be miles long. In Calcutta Botanical Gardens, there is a banyan tree which is 1 square mile. And yet, We know that the potency of that entire tree is originally invested within a small seed. In the same way, the Lord has inconceivable potencies which allow him to do these things. And there are some very nice examples given by Jiva Goswami to describe the inconceivable potency of the Lord. And here are some of them. He says, the Lord's, although the inner part of Dwarka is only 12 miles in diameter, 96 miles in diameter, within that small place there are millions of palaces, each of which is 14 miles across. Again, that's inconceivable. Another example is Govardhan Hill, which although very small in size, contains the entire spiritual realm of Gokul. Jiva Goswami says it this way. Another example is that Narada Muni, this is more commonly known, Narada Muni, when he went to Dwarka, Narada Muni is the famous spiritual spaceman, and he can go to all different places without the use of a spaceship by mystic potency, spiritual potency, mystic potency given to him by the Lord in the form of his instrument. When Narada Muni went into Dwarka, Krishna had 16,000 palaces, and Krishna was able to expand himself personally to be present in each and every palace at the same time. And Narada Muni, because he has mystic potency, he went to all of these palaces, and he saw that the Lord was simultaneously present in all the palaces, and that in some he was performing the activities of morning, some he was performing activities of midday, and some he was performing activities at night. So in other words, by the inconceivable achinta shakti potency of Krishna, he was able to make time flexible according to his own needs. Something was in the morning, something was at noon, something was at night, and it was all simultaneously going on. Plus, he was simultaneously present in all the palaces at the same time. Therefore, this defies normal reasoning, logic, which is based upon two-dimensional or three-dimensional ideas of time and space. Our problem, we were sitting with Prabhupada in his room, and Prabhupada was describing the universe, and he was trying to explain to us about the universe, and I kept saying, but Srila Prabhupada, everyone knows that when you get in an airplane and you take off in the airplane and you fly west, that eventually you come to the other, you know, and I went through a whole explanation, and Prabhupada said, you are simply prejudiced. You are prejudiced. I said, but I'm just trying to, he said, no, you are prejudiced because everything that you're trying to understand is based upon wrong conceptions or limited conceptions that you learn from the time you were born. Three-dimensional conceptions. There is something much bigger than this. So if we want to understand Krishna and Krishna's abode and how all of these things are going to work, we have to accept this factor known as achinta shakti, inconceivable potency of God, which means that we have to admit our own limitations. Anyone who is too proud, who's very much proud of his intelligence, will definitely become disturbed or irritated, you see, when they have to come up against Krishna. And that is, those persons, if they fail to surrender, are known as what? Huh? Either Maya Prita Gyanis, those whose intelligence is stolen by illusion, or demons. Demon. D-E-M-O-N. Yes. So, Srila Prabhupada states, he also, by the way, this quoting of Jiva Goswami is only based upon Prabhupada. Here you will find in the Chaitanya Chaitamrita that Prabhupada also quotes. He says, according to Jiva Goswami, and then he quotes all of the same points. Jiva Goswami concludes that Krishna Loka is the supreme planet, the spiritual sky beyond the material cosmos. And these places on earth, like Vrindavan, are facsimiles. That is a very popular word now, right? Everybody uses facsimile. What are they called? Facsimiles. Facts. Huh? Facsimile. No, but there's a facsimile when it's sent, the messages. Facsimile message. So fax messages, this is a facsimile also. Everything that we see there is here. Now, to prove this, the following is stated in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita. Srila Sanatana Goswami has written Sri Brihad Bhagavatamrita. And in this book, the hero's name is Gopa Kumar. And you will, maybe we will get a chance later on to hear more about the Brihad Bhagavatamrita when we discuss the different planetary systems. Because Gopa Kumar gets the opportunity through a powerful mantra to travel through space. So when we discuss text 43 of Brahma Samhita, we can read something from Brihad Bhagavatamrita. But for now, here are some statements by Gopa Kumar. He had the opportunity to go back and forth from Krishna Loka in the spiritual world to Gokul Vrindavan in this world where we are situated. And he says, staying for a long time in Goloka, I came to see that it was the same as beautiful Mathura Mandala in the material world. Mathura Mandala is also filled with the same gopas, gopis, birds, worms, hills, rivers, trees, and everything else. Sometimes I stay there and sometimes here. Now, I do not see any difference between them. Only when coming and going from one place to the other, I see a slight difference. Attached to both places, I do not know the difference between them. So certainly we can understand that Krishna is present simultaneously. Not only Krishna, but Krishna's associates. His eternal associates have similar potencies as does Krishna. That means that Krishna's father, that means Nanda Maharaj. God can have a father because, not because he is born from him, but because the devotee known as Nanda Maharaj has the loving feeling of fatherly affection for Krishna, and therefore Krishna takes him, this is my father. And similarly his mother, Yasoda, has a maternal affection for Krishna. So Nanda and Yasoda are simultaneously in the spiritual world. At the same time, they are present in the material world. Not in the material world, but within Vrindavan, within the material realm. Another example which can be used to show how this is possible. How is it possible for the spiritual world to be present within the material realm? Another example used by Prabhupada is an embassy. Just like if you go to New Delhi, you can go into the embassy, the U.S. embassy. How many of you have been there? Well, that's not so many Americans. But anyway, if you go in the U.S. Embassy, you will be offered water flowing in from the United States in cups, paper cups, manufactured in the United States by people who are also born in the United States. In other words, practically everything there is American, even though it's in India. Not only that, but if you do something wrong in the U.S. Embassy, if it is wrong according to U.S. law, they can immediately put you into, you know, prison. You can come under the into problems. But if you break Indian law in the U.S. Embassy, it works in a different way. Because in the U.S. Embassy, U.S. law is enforced. That's why it's called diplomatic immunity. Diplomats who live there, they're not tried by the same laws as anyone else. So here's an example of a place, an embassy, which is a representative place from America, but it's existing in India. So to some extent, that should give us some idea of how it is possible for Krishna's realm to be transported here. In this regard, there's a very nice description given in the Garga Samhita. There's a quote, not only from the Garga Samhita, here. Mrityunjaya Tantra. And there's also a quote in the Mrityunjaya. I read from the Mrityunjaya Jaya Tantra, but also in the Garga Samhita, the same is true too. Bhakti Devi, who delights the gopis of Vrindavan and places great devotion for the Supreme Lord in the hearts of the devotees, by her own wish brought the highest Vaikuntha planet from the spiritual world and placed it on this earth, where it became known by the name of Goloka Vrindavan. In the Garga Samhita, there is a story discussed in which Brahma approaches Krishna and says, "We need your help. Please come." So at that time, Krishna was with Srimati Radharani. This is in the Garga Samhita. So Srimati Radharani said, "What about me? Are you gonna? I will have to go wherever you go." So Krishna said, "Certainly you will go." But then she said, "But I cannot go without Giriraj. I cannot go without the Jamuna. I cannot go without all the tamal trees." So then he said, "By your wish, everything will go there with you." So simply by Srimati Radharani's desire, this place became manifest. So Srimati Radharani is the original form of Bhakti Devi, and therefore it is Bhakti Devi's potency, Radharani's potency, by which Vrindavan Dham is manifest here in this world. There is a statement by Srila Prabhupada that if there is a difference between the two places, the difference is as follows. That the spiritual world is not, mercy is not as amply available in the spiritual world as it is in this Gokul Vrindavan. Why? Because only liberated souls are able to behold the spiritual world, whereas even those of conditioned nature are able to behold this manifestation of the spiritual world here. So there's greater act of mercy on the part of the Lord in this manifestation. Chaitanya Chaitamrita states that, in case some of you get confused, these names are interchangeable. Goloka, Gokula, Vrindavan, Sweta Dweep. The names are sometimes used interchangeably. But we will try to say that Goloka means that place in the Vaikunthas, the highest Vaikuntha Loka, and we shall call this Vrindavan as Gokul. Although sometimes they are interchangeably used, so don't get confused. By the context, you should understand what is being discussed. Now, what is our problem? What is the problem? The problem is that at present we are situated in Vrindavan and we feel very cold. Some of us even have a cold. And sometimes, you know, we get disturbed by cinema music being played at the lassi shop, or sometimes we get into arguments with rickshaw wallahs, all kinds of things. So what does all this mean? It means that we are not yet Krishna conscious. Because when you are fully Krishna conscious, then you will actually understand that we are in the spiritual world. Just like Srila Prabhupada was sitting in Los Angeles giving a lecture. And what did he say? He said, "You think that I am sitting in Los Angeles, but actually I am sitting in the spiritual world, Goloka Vrindavan." Which now leads to the next text. A good bridge. Here we are. Text number 3.
Take questions?
I will ask the headmaster. Should the question be after each text or at the end?
Most of you watching the time.
I may not be watching the time. In other words, you are teaching the art of teaching, so please teach me what I should do now.
I'll write down questions and ask again.
Thank you. Please write your questions down, and I shall try to make time. But these subjects are very, these are very big topics, but we'll try to be more concise. Text number 3. Now we covered these topics, didn't we? What were the two subheadings under the last one? Here. Goloka and Gokula are done. Now, text number 3. By the way, there could have been a fourth topic under text number 3, and I'll tell you what it is. It's the Kam Bij. The Kam Bij Klim. K-L-I-M. That could be under D. 3D. So I'm going to read text 3 to you. Translation. First is Sanskrit. Kanikara Mahayantram Satkonam Vrajakilakam Saranga Satpadistanam Prakritya Purushena Sha Premananda Mahananda Rasanavastitam Hiyat Jyoti Rupena Manuna Kama Vijena Sangatam. Translation. The world of that transcendental lotus is the realm wherein dwells Krishna. It is a hexagonal figure, the abode of the indwelling, predominated and predominating aspect of the Absolute. Like a diamond, the central supporting figure of self-luminous Krishna stands as the transcendental source of all potencies. The holy name, consisting of 18 transcendental letters, is manifested in a hexagonal figure with sixfold divisions. So, we ended by saying, what was the bridge? Okay, so now, the first thing to discuss, that Krishna's transcendental pastimes are of two types, prakat and aprakat. And to help, prakat means manifest, and aprakat means non-manifest. And we will give a quote from a very nice text in the third canto, second chapter, text 12 of the Bhagavatam, a very valuable reference for our subject. Prabhupada says in the purport, when the Lord's pastimes are visible to the human eye, they are called prakat, and when they are not visible, they are called aprakat. In fact, the Lord's pastimes never stop. Just as the sun never leaves the sky. The sun is always in the right orbit in the sky, but it is sometimes visible and sometimes invisible to our limited vision. Similarly, the pastimes of the Lord are always current in one universe or another, and when Lord Krishna disappeared from the transcendental abode of Dwarka, it was simply a disappearance from the eyes of the people there. So here we have a nice definition of prakat and aprakat from Srila Prabhupada himself in the Srimad Bhagavatam. An example, now, so prakat, lila, when the Lord comes within this world and manifests his pastimes, they are seen by some. What is an example? An example are the sages of Dandakaranya forest, who got the blessings of Lord Brahma to take birth in the future when Krishna would come as gopis. And as gopis, when they took their birth, they were able to behold Krishna's prakat lila. So sometimes we can see this prakat lila. Of course, it is not an ordinary person who is able to behold Krishna in his prakat lila. Prabhupada himself said that when Krishna was present on this planet, although many saw him, few could understand his actual position. Very few. However, aprakat lila is even more difficult to behold, at least for those in this world. In other words, there are only a very few great saintly personalities who have obtained the stage of prema, or love for Krishna, that can behold Krishna's eternal pastimes going on in Goloka Vrindavan. Aprakat lila means the eternal pastimes of the Lord which are present in the spiritual world. And those sages or those devotees whose vision is full of pure love and devotion, they can behold those pastimes constantly going on before them. Which leads us to the next topic, subtopic. And the next subtopic is methods for seeing the non-manifested pastimes. Now, one important thing to note is, you may recall that in the purport, this is a very tricky statement which can be easily confusing. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta states, the manifestations of the non-manifested pastimes of Krishna with regard to the conditioned souls are twofold. And then he describes Mantrupashana and Sarasiki. Please understand that the word conditioned souls here does not refer to ordinary mundane personalities. It refers simply to those who are dwelling within this world. It should, because unless someone has attained prema bhakti, they cannot realize the sarasiki pastimes of the Lord. And therefore, although this sentence states that conditioned souls will behold the Lord in two forms, we should understand that anyone who beholds the Lord is not what we would know of as a conditioned soul in the ordinary deprecatory sense of the word. So it should be taken that the word conditioned souls here refers to those souls who are within, at least physically dwelling here in this world. Now, we're going to hear about two different types of methods for beholding the Lord. The first first of all, anyone who beholds the Lord is called Siddha. What does Siddha mean? Yes, perfect. So a Siddha personality is a perfect person. And there are two types of perfections which are discussed by Srila Prabhupada in the following place. Chaitanya Chaitamrita, discussion between Lord Chaitanya and Sri Ramananda Roy. That means Madhyalila, chapter 8. You will find Prabhupada's purport, particularly Madhya 8, text 139. Prabhupada states, Srila Bhaktivinoda, he quotes his grandfather guru, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, considered the Brahma-Bhuta stage in two divisions, Sarup-gata and Vastu-gata. When one has understood Krishna in truth, but is still maintaining some material connection, that means still considering the bodily functions, the bodily needs, but has understood Krishna in truth. Brahma-bhuta, prasanatma, nasochati, nakangshati. A person who is on the Brahma-bhuta platform, but still has some conception of worldly affairs. Just like we see great transcendental personalities, but still they have some considerations which they have, some duties that they fulfill in a worldly sense. That person is known as situated in his swarup, his original consciousness. When that original consciousness is completely spiritual, it is called Krishna consciousness. One who lives in such consciousness is actually living in Vrindavan. He may live anywhere. Material location doesn't matter. When, by the grace of Krishna, one thus advances, he becomes completely uncontaminated by the material body and mind, and at that time factually lives in Vrindavan. That stage is called Vastu-gata. So here's the two words. Sarup-gata and Vastu-gata. One should execute his spiritual activities, Prabhupada says, in the Sarup-gata stage of consciousness by chanting the Gayatri Mantra, the Maha Mantra, etc. And gradually one will realize the Vastu-gata, or become Vastu-siddha. He will become perfect, totally perfect, and have entered into the Goloka planet, even while living in this world. In other words, we are teaching Krishna consciousness so that a person can enter into the spiritual world while living within this material world. And that stage, when you factually enter into the loving pastimes of Krishna, that is called Vastu-siddha, or Vastu-siddhi. Now, how to do it? Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur is discussing this in the purport. The first process which he is teaching is called Mantrupashana. Mantrupashana means to meditate with and to meditate on a particular pastime of the Lord, which the Lord has performed in a particular place, through the recitation of a mantra. By reciting a mantra, that recitation and meditative hearing of the mantra, which describes the Lord's pastime performed in a particular place, that type of chanting is called mantra upasana. What are some examples of such mantras? Vainam kanvantam aravindam daraya taksham. Every morning we're hearing these prayers, right? The Chintamani prayers. Krishna, you can hear, this is a perfect example of mantra upasana. I worship Govinda, the primeval Lord, who is adept at playing on his flute, with blooming eyes like lotus petals, with head decked with peacock's feather, with the figure of beauty tinged with the hue of blue clouds, and his unique loveliness charming millions of cupids. This is a mantra upasana meditation. In other words, Srila Prabhupada has prepared us, has given us the necessary ingredients for performing mantra upasana, if we become qualified. We must become qualified. Remember that. The mantra upasana is not something easy. What is the main qualification for performing mantra upasana? First qualification is shraddha, or faith. One has to have faith in the Vaishnavas, and eventually have faith not only in Vaishnavas, in Guru, in Krishna, in Shastra, and then begin to serve all of these. And through service, one qualifies gradually. One's heart becomes free of unwanted things, and so one can meditate. Krishna smarana, remembrance of Krishna, does not take place by any other means except by the mercy of Krishna, which comes about when Krishna is satisfied through the devotee's sincere service attitude. So when you are qualified, then this is a very nice point, that practically all of the activities that we do now are still going to be performed in all of the various stages of Krishna consciousness. The same activity that is performed by the most new person, neophyte person who comes in the temple, he comes in... Oh, okay, let's have that. Yesterday, it took 5 minutes. Okay, go. Thank you. I hope that I can bring other lights. Yes, can you all? I think you can see your paper somewhere. A neophyte person coming in the temple hears Govindam Adi Purusham Itamaham Vadami, and he's seen the deity. He sees. And a devotee of 3 years does the same thing, and he sees. And a devotee of 10 years does the same thing, and he sees. And a devotee of 30 or 40 years is hearing, and he sees. But the seeing, the experience, is not the same. When Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came into the temple of Lord Jagannath, what happened? He immediately fell down in trance, in ecstasy, because when he saw the deity of Jagannath, he saw Krishna standing there, playing on his flute, and Krishna was right before him. So, in other words, as we deepen, as we become more qualified, and as we deepen our meditation on Krishna, then we can come to the point of mantra upasana, actually meditating on these mantras. That meditation will happen. Srila Prabhupada tells us that through chanting the Hare Krishna mantra, we will gradually be able to realize the name, the form, the qualities, and the pastimes of the Lord. All of these will come as we gradually make advancement. So we should pray to the Holy Name. We should pray to Guru, pray to Vaishnavas, pray to the deities. Please give me that humility, that faith, so that I can one day behold your transcendental qualities, your form, your pastimes before my eyes. We should pray for this. So when a devotee becomes qualified, he performs mantra upasana. And when the mantra upasana, when his ability to meditate through chanting Hare Krishna on the pastime of the Lord becomes fixed. That means sometimes he'll meditate on one pastime. Then he'll chant another mantra, perhaps, or read another prayer and meditate on another pastime of the Lord. And chanting, chanting, he meditates deeply. When all of this meditation becomes manifest before him, and one pastime merges into the next, that means not merges, but connects, one after another, this is called sarasiki. Sarasiki meditation means continuous pastimes going on one after another. There's a very nice description about this. Srila Jiva Goswami has stated, in the stage of sarasiki realization, the various pastimes of Krishna appear before the devotee like a constantly flowing Ganges river. Some of those sarasiki pastimes become recorded in various mantras. And the mantra upasana stage of realization may be compared to a series of lakes within the Ganges river of sarasiki realization. What does it mean? I'm sorry you're all having to write so much, but anyway. Sarasiki, when a person is in sarasiki meditation, just like Lord Brahma, he starts to glorify Krishna, and his glorifications, each one of them becomes mantra upasana prayers. Like Brahma was in sarasiki meditation, and then he recorded prayers, and each one of his prayers, it becomes material for a, you know, becomes the mantra by which someone in mantra upasana can meditate. And it's said that each one of the prayers in mantra upasana are like a lake, a body of water. And the sarasiki realization is like the flowing Ganges, which is flowing through all of these lakes, one after another. In the mantra upasana stage, one hears about Krishna, Nanda Maharaj, and the residents of Rajabhumi. Whereas in the sarasiki stage, one is able to directly see Krishna and his associates. So this is the difference. In one, one meditates, one wishes, oh, when will that day come when I will be able to behold Krishna and Nanda Maharaj and Yasoda and all of the residents of Vrindavan. And in the sarasiki stage, one is actually seeing them directly. So we are coming to Vrindavan just to learn to do this mantra upasana, because Vrindavan Dham is that place which is most suitable for meditating upon Krishna. Everything in Vrindavan reminds us of Krishna. It is such a wonderful place. So gradually we should do mantra upasana. When we become qualified through nice service and surrender, we should learn to meditate upon Krishna by hearing. We have to hear. Mantra upasana comes through hearing regularly from the devotees as they discuss and read from Prabhupada's books all about Krishna's transcendental pastimes. Srimad Bhagavatam is full of very wonderful prayers, mantra upasana prayers. An example of sarasiki meditation is seen in the gopis. You remember when Krishna sent a message to the gopis through Uddhava, Krishna said, my dear gopis, you should understand that it is not possible for you to be separated from me at any time. Jiva Goswami says, although the gopis seemed to be separated from Krishna, he appeared, as he appeared in his manifested pastimes, they were always thinking of him and thus perceiving his presence directly in his unmanifest pastimes. So this is an example, the gopis. You will always be seeing me, Krishna said. That means sarasiki meditation. So, this is the difference. Then we have discussed mantra upasana and sarasiki. And now, to give an example of a mantra upasana prayer, we are presented with the Gopal mantra. This 18 syllable mantra, which we get in Gayatri. It is called Gopal Gayatri. Clean Krishnaya Govindaya Gopi Jana Balavaya Saha. This mantra will now be analyzed. Particularly, the mantra is discussed in a very important Upanishad, Gopal Tapani Upanishad. In the Gopal Tapani Upanishad, the various words of the mantra are given. Krishnaya is Krishna who delivers one from sin. Govinda is he who gives pleasure to the cows. And Gopi Janavallava is Gopinath, he who sports with the gopis. Therefore, we can also say, Krishnaya means the deity who establishes our relationship with the Lord, namely, Srimadan Mohan Vigraha. And Govindaya, or Govinda, is the deity who establishes our service to the Lord, the means by which we can approach the Lord. So this is Govinda Dev. And Gopi Janavallavaya is Gopinath, the deity who helps us to achieve the final goal of life. So the same thing is here. This is the three principles, Sambandha, Abhideya, and Prayojana. Sambandha means our relationship with the Lord. These are the three subjects which are throughout the Vedas. Sambandha, how to establish relationship with God. That means, who am I and who is God? Abhideya, the means by which I can understand that relationship. And Prayojana, the final goal, which is the individual soul developing love for God. These three are there in this mantra. Clean Krishnaya, Govindaya, Gopi Jana Balavaya. Swaha, Swaha, we say Swaha, Swaha when we're doing fire sacrifices. We're offering oblations. But that is a general understanding of Swaha. Another way is Swaha means that I am offering myself to Radha and Krishna just as the gopis are doing. This is in our tradition how we understand Swaha. Now, Kleen Krishnaya, Govindaya, Gopi Janabalaya, Swaha. Now, the word Kleen. I told you 3D, the Kam Bij, Kleen. This word is a Bij. A Bij means a seed. So every mantra has a Bij, B-I-J-A. It is a seed, and in that seed is contained the whole meaning of the rest of the mantra. So this Kam Bij is very important. It is a Bij which fulfills all desires, whether spiritual or material. And therefore, one should not pray in a material way to the Kam Bij, because it will fulfill those material desires. But if you pray with spiritual desire, then it will reward you the results of your prayers. What does the Kam Bij, what does it signify? In this regard, there is a very nice explanation given by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. He says, the K means Krishna. And sometimes, one place, he says, the I stands for Radhika. Other places I have seen the La stands for Radhika. The M stands for their embracing. And the dot over the M is the kiss between Radha and Krishna. Therefore, you can see from this explanation that this is a beach which is a calm beach. What does calm mean? Transcendental desire or transcendental lust. But it is not lust in the material sense. Lust in the material sense means a selfish desire to enjoy. But spiritual lustiness, as exhibited by Krishna's foremost devotees, the gopis, is completely selfless without any personal motivation. The gopis only have a desire to give service to Radha and Krishna. And therefore, their lust means to satisfy Krishna's desire. It is that type of lust. So, Kam Bij means that seed which contains all the elements of the love between Radha and Krishna and the gopis. So it is standing there. Now, what is this thing about hexagonal mantra? Huh? It mentioned a hexagonal mantra. Here's what a hexagram looks like. Everybody knows it looks like a Jewish star looks like a hexagonal mantra. Does everybody know what that looks like? The Star of David. What do they call it? Star of David? Now, hexagram. Now, there's a description in the Gopalthapani Upanishad, which I will read to you. Please pay attention. We're getting to a close. Here it comes. Oh, I took it out already. Okay, coming up. Here. Regarding worship of Govinda, Lord Brahma told the four Kumaras that the Lord's altar should be a golden lotus with 8 petals, within which 2 triangles should be placed along with the Gayatri mantra, thus creating a hexagonal figure with 6-fold divisions. Every mantra has a corresponding yantra. A mantra has a yantra that corresponds to it. A yantra is a kind of a mystic diagram. So, which is suitable for worship, just like sometimes in some temples we see in the Sringa yantra, which, you know, has the various prayers in the Sringadeva, and you can worship this yantra in the same way that we worship orally with the mantra. You can worship in the picture form, a mystic diagram form, the yantra. So this hexagonal design which is being described here is actually a yantra. And there are various rules and regulations for its worship. So within the hexagonal diagram, the form of Krishna is present. And he is like a diamond, shining like a diamond. And the 6 words of the mantra are written on the 6 sides of the hexagon. In that abode reside the dominating is Lord Krishna, the aspect of the Absolute. Because the Absolute Truth is in 2 features, Radha and Krishna. Both the predominating and the predominating aspects are described as Premananda Mahananda Rasavastitam, immersed in the bliss of countless varieties of exchanges of spiritual love. Now I'm running out of time and I almost didn't even complete the last points, which we can leave perhaps for tomorrow and get. Let us have a short question and answer period. And I didn't complete the last part. Is that all right, Corrigan?
Why don't you complete? Forget about the question that was completed.
Was there anybody have any I wanted to suggest also that people may have questions about, you know, anyway. Does anyone have any questions? I just want to see. There are a few. I wanted to discuss the 6 aspects of how to meditate on the mantra, Kling Krishna Govinda Gopi, which are very important. What should we do, Headmaster?
Discuss.
All right. Good. We'll just read them from the book. It says here, the general meaning is that one who desires entering into the esoteric pastimes of Krishna, I'm reading on page 8 of my book, I don't know what page you have. It's the next to the last page of this. Desires of entering into the esoteric pastimes of Krishna will have to practice his transcendental service along with the culture of the devotional knowledge relative to him. What does this mean? It means that each and every person has their own individual relationship with Krishna. Krishna is the Supreme Lord. So each one of us has a relationship with him. He's capable of having unlimited relationships with all the unlimited personalities. We are eternally individuals, and we have eternal personality. It is, although this present personality we have is not our real personality, when we can actually become fully Krishna conscious, the personality of the soul, the spiritual personality, which is eternal, will emerge. And it is that personality that is being discussed here. And it says that with that spiritual personality, one must cultivate one's relationship with Krishna in the following way. One, Krishna Sarup, the proper self of Krishna. One must gradually understand Krishna's self, his form, his qualities, etc. Krishnasya Chinmaya Vraja Lila Vilasha Sarup, the true nature of Krishna's transcendental pastimes in Vraja. That means that you regularly read Krishna book, Nectar of Devotion, Srimad Bhagavatam, especially the 10th canto, and to hear about Krishna's loving relationship with his devotees, and especially to hear them explained by the acharyas. Because the acharyas will reveal to us the true meaning of the relationship between Krishna and his eternal associates. What is the real meaning? Just like when you read 10th canto, Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur, the foremost acharya in explaining Krishna's pastimes. And Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur is always saying, when Krishna says this, actually he is thinking like this, and he is thinking that if Radharani says this, then I will say this. And he reveals the mind of Krishna, and he reveals the mind of the eternal associates of Krishna. And when we hear this revelation about Krishna's feelings and the eternal associates' feelings, our feelings also become invoked. So this is the meaning of hearing about the pastimes of the Lord. And another way is to go to the places where the Lord has performed his pastimes. This is very, very potent. When you go to Govardhan and you see the places on Govardhan Hill where Krishna has performed various pastimes with the gopis, and you hear about those pastimes from the devotees who are relishing these pastimes, that helps you to deeply immerse yourself and to see those pastimes ultimately yourself. So this is the meaning of getting absorbed. And you should do this. You have come to Vrindavan. Part of this institute is to also go to the places of Krishna's transcendental pastimes. Next year, Puri Jan Prabhu has informed us that we will be only holding classes on 5 days. And on the 6th day, we will go on Parikram. So when you have a day off here, don't just lie down your bed and go, oh. Finally, you know, I don't have to go to class, I can relax. No, immediately go out on Parikram. Go out on Parikram, take nice books which describe Krishna's pastimes, and be with a few devotees and hear them and meditate and take your beads and start chanting and trying to imagine those pastimes as the descriptions have been given. Very potent way of understanding Krishna's pastimes. This will help you immensely when you go back to your respective preaching field. Just by picking up your beads and chanting and remembering that experience, you will be in that same place. And then you won't feel the effect of the mundane energy of all these Kali Yuga cities upon you. And this way you can stay transcendental anywhere in the world. You will always be on the transcendental platform. But this is why we're coming here to Vrindavan. Prabhupada wanted everyone to come here for this purpose. Then, Tat Parikara Gopi Jana Sarup, the true nature of his spiritual associates in Vraja, the spiritual milkmen and the milkmaids. Because we are worshipping Krishna, Govinda. We are not worshipping Dwarkanath, particularly we are not worshipping Mathuranath. We are worshipping Vrindavan Radhanath, the master of Srimati Radharani. We are worshipping Gopinath, the master of the gopis. This is how the Brijvasis are worshipping Krishna, specifically in this mood. Therefore, you'll see, the next point is Tat Vallabha, the true nature of self-surrender to Krishna in the footsteps of the spiritual milkmaids of Vraja, because that is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mood. We are all in the line of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. We are all aspiring to become Rupa Anugas, to follow Srila Rupa Goswami. Srila Rupa Goswami is teaching us the mood that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has come to give. Krishna Prema means the love that the gopis feel for Krishna. So each of us has to gradually meditate upon the loving affairs between Krishna and Srimati Radharani. Prabhupada went all over the world and installed Radha Krishna deities to teach this principle. This is the highest truth. Radha and Krishna's Leela. The gopis' mood of worshipping. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu prayed in that mood to be the maidservant of the maidservant of the maidservant of Krishna, the master of the gopis. He said, that is my identity. I'm not a sannyasi, I'm not a brahmachari, not a grihasta, not a brahmana, kshatriya, vaishya, sudra. I'm simply the maidservant of the servant of the servant of Krishna, the master of the gopis. How do we pray in that way? First of all, by hearing. Hear Chaitanya Chaitamrita, hear the discussions between Lord Chaitanya and Ramananda Roy, hear the teachings to Rupa Goswami, hear the teachings to Sanatana Goswami, hear about Lord Chaitanya's dancing in the Ratha Yatra festival. Our books are full of these nectarian descriptions. Read the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, read Nectar of Devotion, read Krishna book, and it will be possible to enter into this mood. And Sudha Jivasya Chit Gyana Sarup, the true nature of the spiritual knowledge of the unalloyed individual soul. Not dry knowledge. No. This knowledge is infused with the spiritual potency known as Ladini Shakti. Ladini Shakti means Srimati Radharani. Srimati Radharani is the personification of Ladini Shakti. When you become sincerely and fully surrendered, when you develop a great greediness and desire to surrender your life to the lotus feet of Radha and Krishna, then Srimati Radharani will bless you. Therefore, her hand is extended and she will give you blessings. And her blessings mean that her potency descends upon you and it infuses the knowledge, all that you have learned, with a transcendental potency that you can understand and experience everything fully. Without being blessed by Radharani, no one can actually understand this transcendental subject matter. Now we have got only academic understanding. Now we are understanding with our intelligence. But when our entire existence and being can fully understand this, that will take place by the mercy of Radharani. When that is what it means, when Ladini Shakti descends upon one, and the Chit Shakti, or the knowledge factor, and the pleasure potency become fused as one, and one has full realization. And finally, 6. Chit Prakritir Artat Krishna Seva Sabhav. The true nature of transcendental service to Krishna is that the esoteric relation is established on the waking of one's pure cognition. Pure, I have just described this, pure cognition, pure realization becomes possible by the grace of Radharani, and when Radharani's grace is upon one, then one becomes established in one's eternal loving relationship with Krishna. So this is what is supposed to happen through the mantra. Through mantra pashana, through sarasiki realization, one comes to the point of loving eternal service to Krishna. Then one actually can understand who one is. Not that I am this body, I am a man, I am a woman, I am American, I am Indian. None of these things we will understand. But we will understand who I am actually in my eternal relationship with Krishna. What is my name? What is my age? Who are my parents? What is my relationship with Krishna? Where is my residence? All of these things will be revealed. The spiritual identity of the soul. So we pray, at least we can understand at this point with our intelligence, what is going to happen in the future, and then let us pray and pray and pray and pray and serve more and more, do more and more service to the Vaishnavas, serve the mission of Prabhupada, the founder of Charya Viskan, and one day qualify in some birth, if not in this birth, in some future birth, that we can actually enter into these wonderful loving affairs of Krishna. So we stop here. Now, what time is the aarti? In 5 minutes?
5 minutes.
Anyway, we'll take some couple of questions. Is that all right?
Yeah.
Okay. So, question.
We've also given everyone the inspiration. Huh? We've also given everyone the inspiration to what to be doing during RT.
Yeah, first you have to go to RT. Okay, question. Okay, first hand up.
You said that Krishna is in the center of the hexagonal, Chandravati Dhamma. What are some of the essences?
Yeah, on each side is one of the transcendental words. Govinda, Gopi, Jana, Balabhaya, Svaha. Each one of these surrounds. Radha and Krishna is at the center like a luminous diamond. And on each side are these words.
Maharaj, do you advocate the use of yatras?
This is the invitation. It is done. here it is described. We have not read very much. I don't have much experience about this, nor have I done it. But I have seen in some temples that it is done. Especially I've seen the Sringa mantras, yantras. And certainly it is part of the transcendental science. It can be done. One has to simply know how to do it. That means one has to be authorized to do it by one's guru, and one has to be trained by a proper person. And then it can work, certainly. It is a bona fide, legitimate way of worshipping Krishna. Here it is mentioned in Brahma Samhita.
Then they have in Mayapur and Lord Nrisingadev.
Yeah. Under Lord Nrisingadev, because they know how to do it there. Under Lord Nrisingadev's deity in Mayapur, they have this Nrisinga yantras. It can be done. Of course, Maha Mantra can be chanted, and that is also good. But it can be done. Was that your question?
Yes.
Oh.
When five sacrifices are performed in our temple, sometimes signs are designed that are made.
I cannot say. Does anyone know the signs around the fire yagna? I don't know.
They call raghus.
Huh?
They call raghus.
Yeah, I'm not so acquainted with that. I can't say for sure. Yes, Maharaj.
Maharaj, earlier on in your lecture you were saying spiritual world, the difference between a material manifestation of Goloka and Gokula here, what you say Gokula and Goloka, is that the conditioned souls, you said that here Gokula is visible to the manifest to the conditioned souls. But I thought you were also saying in the course of your lecture the conditioned souls only see the mayic energy in the holy dawn.
No, but I said that this word conditioned souls here is a different meaning than what we say by the ordinary conditioned souls.
That's what you're referring to.
Yes, yes.
You were explaining how Lord Balaram is the first expansion of the Lord. So how can you understand Srimati Radharani's position?
Srimati Radharani is the second half of Krishna. It is described... I was just reading to Giriraj Maharaj yesterday. Maybe I wrote it down. Here, I will read. I hope I wrote it. Just be patient for 1 second. You will hear something very worthwhile. Where did I read that? Anyway, Krishna was standing under a Kadamba tree, and at that time he saw a reflection of himself, and he thought, how beautiful this personality is. And thinking in this way, immediately a second half of himself manifests. This is given in one, it is in the Vrindavan, some Vrindavan Shastra, quoted by the Goswamis. It's quoted, it's quoted by Raghava Goswami. That he, and immediately, immediately Srimati Radharani manifests herself in order to fully be able to enjoy with Krishna. So we should understand that in order to fully enjoy the position as being the Supreme Lord, to enjoy His beauty, He manifests His other half, or His second half, of Srimati Radharani. So Radha and Krishna are two halves of the same Absolute Truth.
So she's not an expansion?
Not in the same way as Baladeva. She's Shakti Tattva. She's His potency. And Baladev is not considered in that. He's the immediate expansion of Krishna.
Maharaj, we've heard that one distinguishing factor between Goloka and Gokula is that in Goloka there are no killing of demons, there's only rumors of demons like that. I was just wondering if you could mention something about that.
That will come up in text 37. That way we save time for tonight. And it does come up. We will discuss the killing of demons in text 37. If you can because again the same subject comes up. So the, you know, we'll save some nectar for that time. Another question?
I think we should allow the ones to
go. All right. The headmaster has ordered us to shut down for the night. Thank you very much. I apologize for not giving more time.